Generoso, midnight on Tuesdays. Listen to a man kiss his own ass so much, he throws his back out.
Welcome back to Sphereo. We are here on WMBR, Cambridge, MIT. And today we talk to Bhopal Chemical Disasters. If you guys have any questions, last minute comments to us, you guys are feel free to call us at 617-253-8810. And we have a few announcements for you.
Okay, so our first announcement is that on Saturday, April 25th, there will be a free showing sponsored by the Office of the Arts at MIT. It'll have an appearance by the director, Abderrahmane Sissako, and it's going to be centered on 8 different themes and it's going to express the opinion on the progress made and setbacks faced by our planet today, including films like Eradicate Extreme Poverty and Hunger, or Tia's Dream. And it's going to be in Building 26, Compton Laboratories, Room 100 at MIT. It's going to be this Saturday at 4 p.m. The next event I have to announce to you is by Guatemala Solidarity. It's going to be this Sunday, April 26th. It's going to take place at St. Columbville Church in Brighton at with a mass at 12:45 p.m., followed by a short film and reflection about Monsignor Girardi. So it's going to be about the Guatemalan Solidarity Movement. He was a martyr and a former bishop in Guatemala. On Monday, April 27th at 5:30 p.m., there's going to be a film called Akka, Tales of Dalit Woes, and it's going to be a documentary movie screening. And you'll be able to meet Bimal Gadal, a human rights activist, documentary maker, and NGO organizer. Bimal will briefly talk about the Dalits in Nepal, and we will then view a screening of a documentary he wrote and helped make. It's a saga about socioeconomically oppressed people from the plains of Nepal. And it's going to be in Brandeis University Intercultural Center. And that's all the announcements I have for you today. But
if you want to find out more about Bhopal, go to bhopal.net or studentsforbhopal.org and get involved.
All right, great. That's the show for you guys today. And I just want to give a shout out to Amy, whose birthday was yesterday. And she'd like to claim that she turned 20 this year. But so happy birthday, Amy. And we'll be coming back here next week. So you guys can catch all our shows on our website, www.mit.edu/hemisphere/sphereo. We'll talk to you guys next time. Bye. Adios.
مرحباً مرحباً I'm a Dr. Jalis Sakran and I welcome you. I welcome you to Music for Human, New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We have with us today Professor Levine, Professor of New Age Jewish Mysticism. Professor, welcome.
It's great to be here once again.
We also have with us the Priestess Isis returning for the second time to the show. Priestess, welcome.
Thank you.
So here on Music for Humans, the three of us in the studio are trying to connect to you. And of course there are two modes of connection. There is receiving and transmitting. And when the effects are combined, these modes, there is a union, and we call that joining the circle. Our modes of connection during the program are using the telephone and using the telephone requires the knowledge of a certain sequence of abstract numbers.
A code, if you will.
Without this code, you will be unable to connect. And we offer it to you. The code is 617-253-8810. Call and commune with us. In the meantime, I would like to tell you about a dream that I had recently. I had a dream that I somehow was another person. I lost all of my identity. I lost myself. It was as though I was observing myself from outside, from a second aspect. I was observing myself remotely. Looking upon myself from outside of myself.
And who were you as the observer?
I do not recall having any identity. It's bizarre. It's as though I had an identity which was my identity, and I was judging myself as a second person without comparison.
So you were the null or the cipher.
I was the cipher, or as we say in Arabic, the cipher. I was the zero, the sizz, the void. I judged myself very severely in this dream. I regarded myself as a foolish man, a transdermal mediator without cause, a failure.
But you're not a failure. Are you unhappy with yourself?
Well, I don't think that I am, but it certainly was startling. It was an unusual experience to judge myself so harshly.
Well, it's true that it's often said that one can't judge oneself truly as long as one inhabits one's own body and memories. One needs space and perspective.
Yeah, I agree. I find that it is often difficult to look at oneself without making excuses, without excusing oneself. And at the same time, when I look across the table at my co-hosts, yeah, I'm free to judge them harshly as I like. And not that I do judge you harshly, but I do look at you with a critical eye. You know, and perhaps this is unjust.
Well, it's also said that one of the chief aims of transcendental meditation is to pull oneself away from one's own identity and stream of memories in order that one can judge oneself truly as an objective observer. So this dream that you had was, in my view, truly an amazing and golden spiritual opportunity for you.
I second that notion.
The idea that I was able to actually gain from the experience. And yet it made me wonder if I have been hypocritical. And I think that was the message that I took home from the dream. I woke with a panic, this idea that I lacked integrity.
Well, hypocrisy is the engine of human invention.
Still, it doesn't feel very good.
But this was an opportunity for you to break from your stream of identity and memory and to reimagine yourself as a new being, perhaps a non-human being or a transformed human being.
And perhaps that was the message, that maybe that was my place, that I need to spend yet more effort in meditation and to achieve this state of mind that I found in my sleep so easily, in my waking hours, to become comfortable looking at myself the same way I look at others.
Well, I too had this sort of experience in my waking moments, actually, as a result of my meditation practice. In my previous mode of being, I worked exclusively as a pest control expert, mosquito control in particular. And it wasn't a very meaningful existence. I would just spend all day driving around, killing mosquitoes, taking samples of mosquito larvae. Mm. And I was only through this meditative practice of removing my consciousness from myself and becoming the sifr, as they say in Arabic, mm-hmm. the null, the cipher, that I was able to imagine myself anew and afresh and reach a transformative moment to allow myself to begin a new path of enlightenment.
To identify yourself with nothing?
Well, yes, nothing at first, but then eventually the mosquito. The mosquito that in my former existence I had been so intent upon destroying, that became the symbol of my spirituality.
The ability to identify with your prey.
My former nemesis.
Was very important.
Yes.
You did that enable you to exterminate it more efficiently?
Well, at that point, I immediately quit my job and I moved
so
to...
Ironically, the same experience, the same realization which would have made you truly the ideal assassin of the mosquito made you unable to actually commit the deed.
Yes, but that's probably true in many human endeavors, that once a person reaches the prime and perfect ability to achieve a certain aim, they no longer have an interest in achieving that aim. It's an irony of human existence. It's a joke that's been played upon us by the gods.
Ironic that we were given the desire for things and a limited capacity to acquire them.
And in some Eastern thoughts, Eastern traditions, it's said that when one is on the brink of achieving the perfect ability to achieve human aims, they perforce, at that point, must die without realizing those aims, because human, to be human is to be imperfect. I wonder, Priestess Isis, do you agree with this idea that humanity, being human itself, is... one of the conditions of being human is imperfection. Are you an imperfect being?
Actually, I am a perfect being. So I must disagree with that for myself.
You are a perfected being.
Yes.
I've heard it said that in the cult of Isis, the belief that perfection can be attained is widespread.
Well, yes, it's one of my main teachings. And it can happen, I assure you.
It's funny because I've heard it claimed that the human being who's the most beautiful possible example of human body, in terms of their body or their face and their abilities, if that occurs, if they have that perfection, then it must follow that they won't be able to sing in tune, because singing in tune would perfect them as a human and make them into a god. And therefore, the perfect human in terms of radiant beauty must have a poor singing voice.
That perfection is never available to any person, achieved by any person in this life entirely.
Except for me.
Except for the Priestess Isis.
Yes.
And your followers, presumably, or?
Well, I can't speak for all of them, but there are a few who are like me as well.
Who have achieved perfection.
Yes.
Perhaps I should become a follower, because I know I'm far from a perfect person.
I know that already.
And we all know that Dr. Jalas is far from a perfect person. He has many addictions and vices.
I will tell you one secret. The way to become like me is to learn how to belly dance perfectly.
So, in fact, achieving perfection in one thing yields perfection in all things.
No, because you can be perfect in square dancing, but that won't lead to perfection. It can only be through belly dancing, through my style of belly dancing.
And what is that style?
Well, I can only show you, not tell you.
I guess the radio is an imperfect medium of communication for this kernel of truth.
Probably because it cannot belly dance.
The radio cannot be made to dance in any way, in fact.
So hence, it is imperfect, necessarily.
I should remind our listeners that the telephone number to reach us to complete the circle of communication is 617-253-8810.
And we have an operator standing by with two open lines, so the circle theoretically could be expanded to five nodes, making it a pentateuch.
Then it's said that the pentateuch is the perfect shape. Inferior maybe to the pentagram.
Yeah, it's unlikely we will be truly symmetric because of unusual attenuations that are achieved through the phone lines.
Now it is a day of unusual beauty in the Cambridge area. Sparkling beauty. So it's likely that many of our listeners are...
Our would-be listeners
are... out
sailing.
Sailing or meditating on the green lawns.
Or they are enjoying the transmission psychedelically, telepathically. And hence they cannot respond directly.
They may be meditating upon the cloud forms and using this form of meditation to consider their past experiences and their life. I find that often when looking at indeterminate shapes such as clouds or patterns of fingerprints upon a glass, one can imbue these shapes with memories of their past and reconceptualize their own identity in a manner similar to what you experienced in your dream.
And memory definitely was a core feature of my dream. This idea that one could lose oneself entirely in a sea of the void, like swimming in a great vat of jello. It's difficult to regain one's bearings, and memory is critical there. It has been said that a person is composed entirely of their memory, and we can only wait for the full loss and the person no longer being themselves, as it happened to my mother.
Well, what exactly happened to your mother, Dr. Jalas?
My mother.
And this is your biological mother, not your adopted mother?
Well, as far as I know, my mother began to lose her memory. This was after the great accident in the sands. And gradually she began, I thought, to go insane, to lose her mind. But in fact it was, I realized later, as the syndrome progressed, she was losing her memory and hence losing her identity. She became less of who she was, and eventually she was no one.
That can be seen as a blessing in disguise.
And I could imagine a circumstance in which a person had, to such a great extent, become not the person they wish to be, that their mind would erase itself and return them to the void from whence they came. Well, our operator is indicating we have our first caller. Caller, welcome to the air.
Oh my God, you're answering.
Of course.
I did not expect to actually talk with you.
Well, we also did not expect to talk with you, so it is a pleasant joining. Welcome to the air.
It's our mutual pleasure.
After so much 5-day work a week work, it is so wonderful to hear this show every Friday. It just brings me back to center. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
It's a great experience for all of us. It's difficult to go through an entire lifetime without communing with others, and the opportunity for us to do it weekly is certainly a blessing.
Oh, it is. It is. You have no idea. I won't keep you. I will let you go.
Well, caller, before you go, I wonder if you've ever had any experiences of your own where you've encountered your stream of memory from your past and been able to tinker with it or transform yourself.
I go into the future.
I've
had dreams that things happen 2-3 days later. I'm in that situation. I can't explain it, but it happens. Not in a while, but every now and again it does still happen. It's scary.
There's a French phrase for the memories that we feel like when you feel like you've been in a place and you come back to it, and that's called déjà vu.
Yeah, I know about that.
And there is a similar phrase for the experience you are describing called jamais vu.
Okay.
Which is the reverse, that you come to a place that you have been before and feel like you've never been there.
That's it. So that's, but I've dreamt it.
So you've dreamt the
I have dreamt it.
The first coming.
And then 2-3 a week later, I'm in the situation and I think, oh my God, there I was and here I am.
It's extraordinary. But it's funny when one thinks that perhaps in some alternate reality that perhaps people have memories of what is to come, but not of what has passed. So as one grows older, one grows less and less wise.
That's true.
Well, it's
that is true.
It is said that dreams are a toss of a drop into the great ocean of memory, and I believe this toss allows memory to unhinge itself or unfix itself from its normal stream, its normal directionality, and it can allow leaps into both the past, the present, and the future. And it sounds like you've been blessed with the ability to take that dream leap into future memories.
That I have.
Now, caller, do you actually have control over the time that you view, or is it just random visions?
Completely random. I've tried astral projection sort of techniques, but doesn't really work.
And you haven't had much success with it?
No.
I'm not sure how one could take control, or even whether or not it would be beneficial to take control.
Now, some people...
That's a good point. Just let things happen and then see what happens later.
There have been some reports of people who have the ability in their dreams to inhabit the memory stream of other people. not just their future, their past, or their present selves, but the selves of others, sort of similar to what Dr. Giles experienced, where he was removed from himself, but instead of being just removed, they're actually implanted in the memory of another person.
Now, I have had an experience in waking meditation where I found myself taking the place of another person in a different time and in a different civilization, one that was unknown to me. And there was a period of time when I was exploring a cavern that I discovered in the desert, where when I was in my period of banishment, when I found a soul wanderer, and I entered his soul, and it turned out so there I had repeated experiences with this wanderer, and once I found myself in the body of the high priestess, the high priest, during the at the moment of the autumn ritual, which is, although I'm not familiar with what civilization it was, and I don't know their rituals, it is a common enough thing that I assumed that it was a great sacrifice and prayer, and the liturgical moment was upon me, and it was expected of me that I would recite the secret prayer and perform a certain ritual to guarantee a good harvest in the coming year. And at the very moment of the sacrifice, where the secret formula was to be pronounced by the high priest, I entered him, and I found that, of course, although I was there in his form, I did not possess his memories, and the other priests began to whisper, and I spoke the wrong words, and the priests massacred me.
That's a very sad, sad tale.
And it's all about memory there. Let's take another caller. Caller 2, welcome to the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello, welcome. Marhaban.
Здравствуйте. This is a long-distance collect call from Siberia.
Oh, welcome, Igor. I'm sorry, Ivan the Mellow.
Yes, it's correct. What? It's unfortunate slip of the tongue. I think you may have confused me with someone else.
Of course, of course. How are you, Ivan?
I'm very well. Unfortunately, our airports in Siberia have been closed due to unseasonably warm weather. So I was unable to fly into Boston for the show, unfortunately.
Mm-mm. And is our other caller still with us? Caller 1? Looks like we lost our other caller.
He may have slipped into a dream.
So Ivan, I'm not sure if you have been listening with us, but I wonder if you have any experiences with Jamais Vu. Or
I did have some experiences, but of course never of the caliber that you have experienced. I don't believe I have entered the body of a priest. It may have been a priestess, and that may have been the extent of it, but it was a very momentary delusion, or as you call it, jamais vu.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very trying experience. You can imagine.
Well, not just trying. I would say that it's something to be proud of, so I'm actually calling you to congratulate you on your transcendental spiritual ascent.
Well, thank you, Ivan. It was certainly a formative experience for me, but like many of these experiences, it has certainly left its scars on me.
Well, I have these very momentary flashes sometimes when I've achieved a certain state in my life for maybe a week or 2 weeks, where every hour or so I'll inhabit the memories of a random person for maybe 2 seconds. I'll have the rush of memories into my head, the experience, the touch, the smell, for 2 seconds, and then I'll be back throughout the day. And it can be very disruptive, especially if I'm in a meeting.
I believe I can actually identify with you, because I can very often either go into the thought processes of the person with whom I'm communicating. I'm not sure if that is a mark of high spiritual awareness, or if it is talking of my intellectual prowess. So I'll leave it to the experts.
Yeah, and I mean, such an experience, I think, could be a curse as well as a blessing. I think we often find that there are these dual experiences, that rarely is such a gift without its drawbacks.
I would have to agree. It is a gift, a rather unfortunate gift, that has just too many drawbacks to which one, to one who is not initiated in this, which one is completely unaware. In fact, there are so many drawbacks that I would not recommend for someone who is not spiritually experienced to be able to partake in this type of experience.
Yeah, it's a very good point too. Like, I certainly have met people who believe that their lot would be easier to deal with if they had no memories, if they were somehow erasable and able to start over. But
well, Tovarish Lenin, I believe, said that ignorance is bliss. So, as a follower of this great prophet, I would have to agree.
And yet without, as you say, the proper spiritual grounding, it, I think, would be a really rather difficult state to experience positively.
Yes.
The idea of once again returning to the state of one's birth, the emptiness there, I'm not sure that it would be so simple.
I'm curious if you think that this state of being somehow connects to your dream that you mentioned at the beginning of the show. And in fact, if you're able to draw any connections there, or maybe make some more interpretive elaborations
on the state of being?
On the dream, as it connects to the state of being.
The state of being.
Well, I would probably draw a contrast. I think my understanding of Dr. Jalas's dream is that he was floating in space. His seat of consciousness was floating in the void. Whereas the state of birth, the empty slate that we're born with, is the state of being within the womb, being enclosed in a restricted surrounding of not being open to space. And I think those are very different kinds of experiences. And some people strive for the former and some for the latter in their own meditative experiences. I personally prefer the feeling of floating in space, of being in the empty void, of being feeling my the fact that I'm so minuscule compared to the vastness of space, rather than the feeling of being enclosed and being a world unto myself.
Well, frankly, I prefer to savor the sensation of being in a womb, but unfortunately it just happens that I find myself floating in this null space of you. So it's the desire is kind of contrarian to my current state of being.
And it's an interesting question about what the preference would be. I think few people could tolerate the sensation that they were enclosed, you know, permanently enclosed. And I think that's why there is such terror in us for feelings of being imprisoned or being shut up in a box and buried alive.
On the other hand, it's really remarkable that human beings like to cover themselves in blankets when they sleep. And my personal interpretation of this practice, which is widespread across all human civilizations, is that this enclosure is meant to mimic the feeling of being in the womb.
So it is, in effect, a going back to the womb.
It's a re-wombing.
It's a very powerful image.
I should remind our callers that if they, again, want to join the circle of communication, that our number is 617-253-8810.
And for the curious, we are listening to Firmament's Open-Eyed Ascension. It's a very interesting ambient music.
It's this music, actually, I've never heard it, the recording of it, until now, but I actually heard this music in a dream about 2 weeks ago. This was the soundtrack to that dream.
A soundtrack to your dream?
Yes.
That's very interesting. Now, it's unusual sometimes the differences between one's dreams and one's waking experiences. I've noticed that I don't see my nose in my dream, and that I dream without color and often without sound.
That is interesting. I had a friend who told me the other day that she dreamt about buying soap, and she had to test the various smells of the soaps in the grocery store to see which one she would prefer. And she felt that this indicated that she could actually experience the sense of smell in her dreams. And furthermore, it indicated that she is a very boring person.
To dream about purchasing soap.
That is quite boring.
Now, my own interpretation was that she actually, the dream was telling her that she needed to purchase soap.
Such a straightforward interpretation.
But simple, but profound.
It is indeed the simplest things that are the most profound.
You know, in my dreams, I usually become animals. Actually, my most amazing dream ever was becoming a dragon.
Interesting.
Of course, yes. A dragon is not really an animal, it's a form of mineral.
Well, okay. Anyways, in my dream, I remember it so clearly. There was three dragons chained in front of me. And I realized I was about to partake in a ceremony where the dragons would each choose one person to become them. And in my dream, I realized that the dragon had chosen me. And I remember the dragon eating me and being swallowed alive. And at first there was only darkness in my dream, and I couldn't see. Then I opened my eyes, and I realized that I had become a dragon. And I was so, so hungry that I wanted to eat my own mother.
I've had meditative experiences, not dreams, where I was chosen to be a dragon bride. And that's, I think it was probably more scary than the idea of being chosen to become the dragon, because I would have to satisfy the dragon in all his desires. And
well, for you, that would be quite scary.
And I'd have to wear a dress.
Fireproof.
Asbestos. Presumably. An asbestos dress.
Asbestos dress. The interesting thing, too, there, though, that the priestess Isis mentions that we sort of gloss over, is that if one could become a dragon, then one must also be able to unbecome a dragon. So a dragon could turn into a person or into an animal. But the also another idea that's unusual is the idea of consumption, of being consumed and then being transformed, which is a standard thing, right? We, as the old saying goes, we are what we eat.
I think that saying is usually attributed to Confucius.
Confucius certainly, I think, was wise enough to mention it, but the eater of McDonald's hamburgers, does he realize that he's becoming a McDonald's hamburger gradually? Is that where McDonald's hamburgers come from?
Well, I actually do eat them.
But you are perfect, and so I only assume that that the ultimate state of the person who consumes McDonald's hamburgers is to become the priestess Isis.
Yes, unfortunately, since I am perfect, so many of my followers try to do everything that I do, and I... You know, I already told you my secret. The only way to become like me is to learn my belly dance. And they don't seem to get that. I wonder why.
So maybe there is some limiting state of being, some fixed point, where perfection implies that you are unchanging, that you simply consume hamburgers and excrete hamburgers and never actually change.
Well, the only actual thing which is unchanging in the universe is the point.
The point, which is related, it's the brother of the void.
That's right.
But sorry, may I cut in? I had a question to the great Dr. Levine. About the practice of Kabbalah.
Oh, please, so, go ahead.
So my niece was really drawn into the stylings of Madonna, and speaking about imitation and whatnot, she is suddenly enamored by this concept of Kabbalah. So what do you think? Is this normal? Is this... is there something, some literature that I can give her, or some advice for her to try to?
Madonna is truly a deep practitioner of this ancient Jewish art, and there are ancient writings one can read in ancient languages such as Aramaic. There's a book called the Zohar, which means the Book of Splendor. But personally, for someone of the modern age, I would instead recommend that she actually just study the lyrics of Madonna songs, especially those from the 80s. Like a Virgin has a profound, profound message if you play it backwards and read the lyrics at the same time.
Now, everyone knows that you're a renowned scholar of Jewish mysticism, and we also know that you are an associate editor of the great journal on Jewish mysticism, which, if I'm not mistaken, is named The Protocols of Zion. And you did have an article in The Protocols recently about Kabbalah, about literary criticism of ancient Kabbalah texts. Is it perhaps too much of intellectual treatment, or is it in fact something that you would recommend the youngins to try to lift their spiritual awareness?
Well, it's a little known fact that literary criticism was in fact invented by a secret cabal of Jewish mystics. This whole idea of the interpretation of the text being the only thing that exists is really a Jewish idea, and it's an idea that was promoted by esoteric Jewish thinkers. So I would recommend that everyone learn to practice this art of literary criticism, if you will, throughout their life. They learn to treat life as an interpretation of a text instead of treating it as a fixed point.
That's very deep, very profound.
As soon as one recognizes this insight, it will allow you to change anything in your life that needs to be changed by reinterpreting it for yourself.
I had this experience at some point where I was, for a long period, I began to experience every experience fully. So experience a color with all my senses. This is called synesthesia. And this experience overloaded my brain so that I forget nothing. For a period of time, I would remember every experience in full detail. And it's an astonishing thing, and in this modern age, very desirable one, or perhaps a widely desired one, because obviously, as we realized earlier, there were many hidden drawbacks to being able to remember everything perfectly vividly. For instance, I would wake up in the morning and look at the sun, and I would be able to so vividly remember the moment of sunrise that I actually thought it was sunrise for several hours, which was really tragic. And it took me many years to remember, to learn, to recall how to forget, how to let things go.
Now that reminds me of my own experience with synesthesia. I once prayed in a cave for about 2 weeks to be able to experience this flowering of the senses, this broadening and widening of the senses. And immediately after I was granted my desire, I played Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And to my dismay, as soon as I heard those famous chords, the famous motif of the symphony, I felt the feeling of a feather tickling my buttocks.
And the feather tickling your buttocks at that moment, what was the result then of your next experience, next listening?
Well, as you said, it's over-experience can be a double-edged sword, and the idea that our experiences have to be limited both in time, as you mentioned, and both in scope is important. And we may not want to experience the full range of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Its mastery and its impression may be better served by restricting it to the sense of sound rather than its accompanying sense of touch, which in this case was very unsatisfying.
But I mean, like, whenever you experience it now, am I right in thinking that it looks like we lost Ivan, unfortunately. But am I right in thinking that whenever you hear those chords, that you you repeat the experience of sensing the feather?
Well, I have the memory of that experience, and I've worked hard to erase that memory, but it's obviously still part of my identity.
Well, unfortunately, we have rapidly reached the end of the hour. Thank you to my hosts, the priestess Isis.
Thank you for allowing me to be here.
And thank you for gracing us with your perfection.
No problem.
And thank you to Professor Levine.
It was my pleasure to commune with you again.
I'm Addictor Janis Sakran with Music for Human Beings here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge, Fridays at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Ma'a salama.
Safety.
Number one,
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four,
cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.